Make May your month for big cash winnings at your favorite Washington Gold Casino. Just stop by the Crazy Moose Casino in Mound Lake Terrace and see how their guests are winning thousands in cash prizes. So why not make today your day to strike it rich? Washington Gold Casinos. So close, it feels like home.
This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, good morning. Final hour here of Brock and Salk on 710 ESPN Seattle. Of course, online, 710sports.com. Check us out. You've got a million ways you can listen to us. You can do it on the 710 Sports app, which you should download. You can listen on Alexa or on any of the smart speakers out there. Brock, there's a million different ways to listen to our show. So we appreciate it, whether you're doing it live or on demand, however you consume us. We certainly appreciate that. A lot going on in the news today. Obviously, we started the show with Robinson Cano and the injury to his hand and what the Mariners are going to do. I think the expectation is that Gordon Beckham will be up today, and that will be the what they start off with him at second base. Also today, the Supreme Court voting 7-2 to end the ban nationally on sports betting. Now, this will not change your life here in Washington immediately. There is nothing on the books to change the rule that right now makes sports betting illegal in the state of Washington. So the only thing that's been changed that is that states can now make their own mind up.
Yeah, do you want to know how... I don't know.
But I think a lot of states are going to make their mind up.
Was it DraftKings? What went crazy?
DraftKings and FanDuel a couple years ago.
Yes, and then it kind of got squashed, sense. Right? Yes. Was that because of the feds came in and said, so is this? Are we going to now see 6 gazillion DraftKings commercials?
I would think so.
Once again?
Yeah, I would think they're going to be a really big part of the landscape again and a bunch of other things. You know, Taylor, I don't know, Taylor's not here yet, but esports is going to play a role in this. You're going to see, I have a friend who is in Las Vegas, and he used to be a professional poker player, et cetera, and he's now working on a business that is entirely based on esports gambling, people gambling on video games. And, you know, more and more the whole esports thing is turning into very much a mirror image of where sports has been. And so they'll see gambling there. You'll see probably, and I think this is one of the most interesting ones, gambling in the stadiums and arenas. And if that's the case, are the teams actually going to be making money off of gambling? We saw a little release from the combination of all the players' unions in America who got together and said, hey, if you, the teams, and the owners are going to start making money off gambling, we, the players, want a piece of that action.
Right.
Now you're getting super dangerous. Like, I mean, I don't necessarily have any issues with gambling. I'm not morally opposed. Obviously, I play blackjack a ton. I like to gamble. I really do. I enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big sports gambler, but I completely understand why people get into it. I'm awfully nervous about the closeness of in proximity with the teams because we've seen the Tim Donaghy's. I know everybody in the NBA just glosses over because they don't want to deal with it. Yep. But we've seen that it is possible to fix professional games, and that definitely makes me nervous.
Yes. Now, we have seen this over in Europe, right? You know, I think this is one of those things that, you know, they tend to be a little bit ahead at times. Mm-hmm. We've seen it over there in the Premier League soccer. So before you go freaking out and, oh, my gosh, it's going to ruin everything, it's going to ruin the game day experience and all of that and hit the total panic button, you know, you've started to see that in you know, that soccer is enormous. Now, you can also say, yeah, look what happens. Look at the riots and look at the fights and look at you know, some of the chaos.
Do you think that's over the gambling, though? That just seems to be over the sort of
people emotionally invested.
I don't know. I've never gotten the sense that any of that soccer riot stuff had anything to do with gambling. Maybe it does, and I've missed it, but I've never heard anybody even propose that. I always thought it had to do with just sort of the, you know, the atmosphere and sort of the way they've yes. handled sports over time. It's never dawned on me that has anything to do with gambling.
Yes. Yes. It's much more deep-seated than that. It is much more, you know, provincial and everything else and passionate. So it is. But you, point being, you have at least seen it there. You've seen that foray into it there. You've seen it outside and inside the stadiums. In the soccer world over there. Yeah, I don't know. It's just so far. I said to Kyle, tomorrow we should have Graz and go-to guy. Like, we should have a full-blown, you know,
with two people who are more invested in it than you and I are.
Yes, and just know the game and you know how important it is to so many people and what a big deal it is on a huge scale. And then ultimately, I guess, Mike, what states, you know, are going to do and you know, some of the legislation within these, say, what is this state going to do, you know, as far as what this is going to look like in the years ahead? I know this. They won't be on the sidelines. if there's money to be made, if there's, you know, revenue to be made, yeah. I think you're going to see many of these states, this one included, that's going to try to capitalize on
that. Well, let's know this. So remember Brent Musburger, when he left the job at ESPN a couple years ago, went to the VSIN, the Vegas Sports
Information Network,
right? Yes. Is that what it is, VSIN? And so, you know, they're all of a sudden in a completely different realm, right? Like, this is going to become a bigger and bigger deal.
Yep.
They posted this morning a map of the 50 states and who and kind of where all the states are. Washington does not have any recent bill introduced on this front. We've seen, obviously, Nevada has full-scale legalized sports betting. And this is just on sports. Mm-hmm. This is not on blackjack or table games or poker or anything else like that. This is just sports. But there are a bunch of states, Connecticut, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Mississippi, that have all introduced bills, or rather passed bills, excuse me, and they're just waiting for the Supreme Court to make this legal. Now that that's happened, I would think in those, what, 2, 4, 5 states,
mm-hmm.
you're going to now see legalized sports betting in all of them. Now, Connecticut's got a couple of massive casinos.
Yes.
Halfway between Boston and New York, yep. you have Mohegan Sun and yep. Foxwoods. Massive, 2 massive casinos.
Yeah, New Jersey will go nuts.
New yep. Jersey has Atlantic City. I don't know what's in Pennsylvania, West Virginia, or Mississippi, but, you know,
Mississippi got all the riverboat casinos
in Mississippi, and then throw in West Virginia and Pennsylvania. You're going to see some major changes in those states, and if those states start taxing it and making money off of it, well, you got a whole bunch of other states that have recently introduced bills, including some really big cities. California has introduced it. New York has introduced a bill. In Illinois, where Chicago is, they've introduced a bill. New Orleans, Louisiana has introduced a bill. Let's see. So that list all of a sudden grows in a major. Baltimore and Maryland. Maryland has introduced a bill. How long before some of the others? Washington has not. So if you're listening locally in Washington or even in Oregon, Idaho, Montana, none of the Northwest states have introduced any kind of a bill on this, but it'll be interesting to see whether there's any cry for them, too.
Yeah. Now, you do have it at the racetracks here, right? I mean, you do have it down at Emerald Downs.
But you can't sports bet there.
You can bet on the event. You can bet on the race. So what's the difference between going down to Emerald Downs and betting on horse races versus walking into CenturyLink Field or Safeco Field or what it will be renamed next year and walk in there and say, yeah, I'd like to put a bet down. The over-under or the over, or the total points or the win or the loss. And, you know, I mean, what does that look like emotionally? What does that do to the fans that are already so, especially for the Seahawks fans that are so wired up? And
I just assume that anybody who's interested in sports betting already does it somehow. That there aren't a tremendous number of people who are like, yeah, all right, well, now that it's legal, I'll probably jump into that boat or do it often.
Okay, now which
the sense
these?
Anyway that people who are invested in sports betting yes. already do
now,
it.
Now, you know, we've talked about this last week. We've talked about the NBA, and while you're not watching, and Howdy thinks the script's written and everything else, it is the fastest growing sport, mm-hmm. ratings and revenue wise. It is the most connected to their audience, whether it's the music, whether it's the pace, whatever it is, the connection it has with its audience, Mike, is growing. Where some of the other leagues are shrinking a little bit.
And does this change that?
Well, and what has the NBA already done? What has Adam Silver done more than any of these other commissioners or any of the other leagues? He has been more proactive to say, yeah, man, we're not going to duck away from this thing. We're not going to shy away from it. And is he going to find even more interaction and connection? And you know, are you going to see the NBA? I think you're going to see the NBA be the first league of the major pro sports leagues in this country to really find a way to partner and make the most of this new legislation.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, we'll come back to it. If you guys have thoughts, we'll certainly like to hear from you guys. 206-421-3776. That's the other big story today. And then, unfortunately, over the weekend, longtime Seahawks coach Chuck Knox passed away at the age of 86. Dave Wyman and Danny David Moore, of course, played for him for years. And he takes a few minutes with us here to remember on the Venue Kings Hotline. Good morning, Dave. How are you?
I'm good, guys. Good to talk to you. How you doing?
Great. I mean, obviously, I wish it was we'd rather just be sitting here talking sports betting with you, because I know that's something that you're at least interested to talk about as well. But you played for Coach Knox. When you heard the news over the weekend, how'd you feel?
Well, I was kind of prepared for it. You know, there was the Seahawks are a really tight group, and, you know, a lot of the people that have been over there for a long time, like Sandy Gregory, kind of let people know a few weeks ago that, you know, this was probably coming. And so I was kind of prepared for it, but it's never easy. And, you know, just think back on, and really with Chuck, you know, all I can think about are the good things. And I've talked to a few people about Chuck and done more laughing than anything, just remembering him. But mostly it was about a guy who I respected so much. You know, I was never wanting for a father figure. My dad was just the strongest man and just a great example. But I think Chuck helped me become a pro. He helped me be a professional and to grow up, because sometimes in football, you don't really grow up. You're playing a game. And when I got in the NFL, and I wasn't sure whether I really liked Chuck in the beginning or not, because I was friends with my coaches in college. But man, the more I got, the more my career progressed in the NFL, the more I appreciated Chuck and everything that he taught me and how he treated me.
Bill Parcells once said of his friend Chuck Knox, who passed away Saturday from complications of dementia, quote, "He's the guy tough guys want to play for." You live that. You live that, Dave. What did that look like in that building?
Yeah, you know, it was, like I said, he was tough. He had a meeting every day, and he would stand up in front of everybody. And the one thing, like, I don't know if you remember this, Brock, but you would get fined. Chuck was really big on weight. And I think if you went to Chuck and asked him, like one time I went and asked him for an extra 5 pounds because, you know, I was just naturally a heavier player. And he'd say, "I'll give you 2, you know. So then you had to weigh in. And if you didn't make your weight, he would fine you $50 a pound. But it wasn't the money. It was him announcing the fine in front of everybody. You never wanted Chuck, and he would call people out. And that's what you did not want to be in that morning meeting before it got going. You did not want to be the guy that he was calling out. And a lot of times he would say, "This guy over here." That was his thing. He'd say, "Yeah, this guy over here, you know, he's watching the film, but he's just watching the game. He's not studying it. This guy over here," and you always swore he was talking about you. And it always looked like he was looking at you. I always said he's like the Mona Lisa. Wherever you stand on the practice field, it looked like Chuck was looking at you. So he was just one of those guys that just commanded respect. And, you know, he was just a very tough guy. But he also liked to play. One of my favorite stories was that he stopped one time at a liquor store on the way on the bus on the way from the stadium. It was down in L.A., from the stadium to the airport, and he had a couple of the D linemen go in, gave him some money, and they came running out of the liquor store with like 8 cases of beer after a win.
That doesn't go down today.
Yeah, don't see that happening. Yeah, he was very old school, but like I said, he was tough, and you practiced hard, and he expected a lot out of you. But you could have some fun too. And I told this story a million times where he came in the hotel bar, not the hotel bar, the airport bar in Kansas City. We won there in 1990. That was the one any Seahawks fan knows where Dave Craig ducks the 7th or 8th sack.
Yep.
I think
Derek Thomas,
and then throws a strike to Paul Scanzi for a touchdown. We hadn't won there in 10 years. And that was the only place I knew of in the NFL where you go through the airport. And, we went through the airport and we're going to the plane, and there's a little bar off to the side. A couple guys went in there, and then a few more. Pretty soon the whole damn team was in there. And all of a sudden, you know, the plane's delayed, and then Chuck comes walking in. We all thought, "Oh no, we're all going to get in trouble here." And Chuck peels off $200 or $300 bills and buys everybody drinks. And we sat there and had a little party in the airport, delayed the flight home by about an hour.
It's so amazing how powerful it is when people break character, especially the tough guys like that, right? I mean, when you consider him to be as you know, he's ground show, he's this tough guy, and he's your coach, Dave, and you always kind of talk about being afraid of him. Were there other moments like that where he broke character?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. There was the one time I thought that was kind of interesting where I stood up to Chuck was we had what was called – Brock, I don't know if you remember thud tempo, which meant that basically you're going to go full speed until the tackle, and then you're not going to tackle guys, and you're not going to take them to the ground. Well, we had this this running back named Tommy Agee, and he wasn't exactly going along with it, and he was making us look bad. He was running through tackles, and he kept his feet going, and he wouldn't play to thud, what we called it. And so I came up one time, and I just nailed him and knocked him down. And Chuck came over and was screaming at me, you know, about, hey, I just told you, you know, we're going sub tempo here, and kind of yelled at me in front of the whole team. And I said, hey, I gave him one of his own sayings. I said, hey, he's got his hand in my back pocket, because Chuck used to say that all the time. And he kind of backed off a little bit and just kind of went back. And Rusty told me later on that he liked it. But I was like, oh, man, I kind of called him out in front of everybody. I didn't really call him out, but I kind of stood up to him. It was the first time I'd ever done it. And I thought that, you know, he kind of appreciated that. Like, that's what he wanted you to be. He wanted you to eventually develop into that kind of a player. So, like my coach Rusty told me, I think he actually liked it. He liked that I was sort of taking that that command on the field and things like that. So, yeah, that's another thing. I could tell 50 stories. I mean, yeah. Chuck was very quotable, and a lot of times would make you laugh.
How about this one, Dave Wyman of Danny Dave and Moore with us? How about the current Seahawks today, Dave? As close as you are to the program and the pre and the post game and doing games, and we're there an awful lot in training camp, who are the Seahawks of today that would have thrived in ground Chuck and for Chuck Knox in your day?
Ethan Posick, guys like that. He just popped into my mind because when we interviewed him last year, he's like, I just like playing football. And, you know, he's just all about football. That's kind of Chuck, old school, you know, that kind of stuff. I don't think he would have been – Chuck was very intimidating. You know, and I know Pete's a different kind of coach, and he gets different things out of players. And I think Pete can be – I think he's more of an old-school guy than we all think. But, you know, that whole story about Michael Bennett supposedly reading a book, which Pete said wasn't true, and I believe him. But I can't imagine anybody, you know – acting that way around Chuck Knox. I mean, you'd be out of there.
I guess, Dave, he would
fire you.
How did he balance? Because I hear so much of this, and I think of Coach James as well. And Don James used to sit up above the practice field and, you know, hardly even talk to players. How did Chuck balance that fear, right, that he created with also just gaining respect? Because I think a lot of times those old school, you just have fear and negative and fear and fear. But how did he and how was he able to, I guess, command also equally that level of respect?
Yeah, it's interesting, Brock. I think some people have it and some don't. And so that's why when, you know, they've talked about head coaches and, oh, this guy could be a good head coach. And, Tom Catlin is the finest coach I ever had, defensive coordinator, just brilliant mind, really good the way he taught. He was very consistent. Tom was not a head coach at all. He just didn't have that it factor. Chuck, you know, it was just the way he carried himself, the way he talked, the way he addressed the team. I mean, when you went in that, I remember the first meeting I ever went in, it was everybody was talking after I was drafted. It was the first meeting of the year, and everybody's, you know, talking and chatting and laughing and all this. And Chuck walked in the room and the place just went dead silent. And that was the kind of respect that he just had. And it comes from, you know, having worked your way up and all that. But also, I just think it's the way you carry yourself. And certain people just have it, and some people don't. Chuck had it.
You have one of these quotes, because we were kind of reading through them. Do you have one that's a favorite? I can read you a few to help you with the memory. But winning and losing are both very temporary things. Having done one or the other, you move ahead. Gloating over a victory or sulking over a loss is a good way to stand still. That's one. I happen to like this. Remember your six P's. Perfect. Do you know the six P's, Dave?
Sure do. Perfect preparation prevents piss poor performance.
Yeah. It's written practice here, but I guess it could be either way. Yeah. That's pretty good.
The Knoxisms are awesome, man. There's some I can't say. There was something about don't urinate in my face and tell me it's raining.
Yeah.
Of course, they're different words. You know, I raised my kids on Knoxisms. I mean, you know, nobody wants to hear your sad story. There's a good one. You know, another one is don't tell me how rough the water is. Just bring the boat in. You know, nobody. You know, there's all kinds of different little Knoxisms that he had.
He wasn't big on excuses, was he?
What's that?
He wasn't big on excuses, was he?
No. No excuses, no whining. I mean, that didn't even need to be said. So, yeah, it's tough. You know, I think one of my favorite moments in the last few years was down in Arizona. I saw Chuck, and he was in a wheelchair, and he couldn't speak. And I saw him, and his face lit up, and his daughter, I think Shirley, his wife, was there. They told me that he definitely recognized me, and I got a picture with him. I kind of squatted down next to his wheelchair, and he's got this big grin on his face, and that's one of my favorite pictures. I sent it to John Boyle. I don't know if it's on Seahawks.com or not, but, you know, I know Moyer had a picture of him and Chuck, and it's just, you know, I just loved seeing him after, you know, and it was sad the state he was in, but just, you know, I just hope that he knew how much I appreciated him and how much he did for me.
Hey, this isn't out yet, and I don't know whether I can talk about it, but I'll ask you about it anyway. I know you and Jim and Danny and Jess went out last week to do something pretty special. It's not going to air for a little while, but, you know, it's been interesting with your old coaches, and you guys went out to talk to Jack Patera.
Yeah, we did. It was really cool to go out there, and, you know, it's kind of solemn at the end, you know, and I think Jack is pretty sick, and I'm not sure if we're gonna see him again. But Jim set up the whole thing, and it was really cool, the relationship that Jim and Jack had, and just sitting there talking to a guy who you know, it's kind of funny, but Jack Patera, his thing, you know, the football is like a whole nother life for him, and you know, I feel like that's how it would be for me if I hadn't gotten into like sports broadcasting. I don't think I would have anything to do with football, and. But since I'm doing this and I love it and I'm in it, but he's kind of a guy that sort of moved on from that. And it's pretty interesting to hear him talk about his past. And but the thing that, you know, that stood out the most was that he said, you know what? It's been a good life. It's been a really good life. So, yeah, good interview. I think we're going to either break it up or maybe put it in a podcast. And, yeah, it was a really cool experience for the four of us to go up there.
Dave, we appreciate awesome. It. I know you guys unfortunately don't have a show today, but I would think tomorrow you guys will be sharing some more of your stories. And we had John Nordstrom on earlier sharing some stories of his own about Chuck Knox. So thanks for spending a few minutes with us, and we'll talk to you soon.
Good talking to you guys. Thanks.
All right, there you go. There's Dave Wyman, of course, generally 3 to 7 o'clock right here on 710 ESPN Seattle with Danny, Dave, and more. But no show today. Mariner baseball pregame show at 3 o'clock. So you have to listen to Dave tomorrow.
Yeah, I think two things. I think Frosty Westrain in this town. He was down at PLU for decades and decades. And the father figure that he was, the impact he had on so many. I think a little bit about my dad. When I hear Dave Wyman talk about a father figure and what Chuck Knox was in his life and in this community to so many, you know, that's the impact that the coaches do have, man. They even grown men, right? Even 23 to 40-year-olds that have made all this money, they're professionals, and you still hear from Dave like all those just fatherly figure principles that he just poured into and impact his life, changed his life.
It's weird the coaches don't like excuses or whining. It's after having the kids at home and like taking them on the ferry yesterday, it's weird that they would be anti-whining.
Son, I've always told you that excuses are for losers.
I love the echo on that. The echo just makes it so great.
Oh, no, that was my dad.
And that bleeds into Wyman. The one thing Wyman hates hearing more than anything is my bad.
Oh. Yeah.
If you screw up, do not say my bad. It'll send him through the roof.
Really?
He's like,
even though that's taking
bad.
Responsibility,
no kidding, it's your bad.
Even though that's taking responsibility, I'm surprised.
Yeah, he thinks it's just pointing out the obvious.
Huh? Like, yeah, I screwed up. I get it. It's on me. I would feel like that would be right up Dave's alley. Maybe he doesn't like the shorthand of it. All right. Speaking of coaches and managers, Brock, the one here in Seattle's got a pretty big decision on his hands. What will he do and why? It's next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Heritage Distilling's BSB Lounge at the ballpark. Award-winning spirits, including BSB and BSB 103. Brown sugar bourbon at 103 proof. Throw your tongue the heater. You can't spell baseball without the BSB Lounge. Heritage Distilling Company, proud sponsor of your Seattle Mariners.
This is Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
The 2-2. Inside, and that hit Robbie Cano.
Oh, man.
And you could hear him let out a yell as that went up and in, and I think that got him on the hand. That is not a good scene here in Detroit.
Bad news. Nothing good about that one. Robbie Cano drilled yesterday with a pitch, hit him right on the hand, breaks his fifth metacarpal, and we'll wait. He's going to see a specialist tomorrow, so we don't have an exact amount that he will be out. I've heard a couple different estimates, and from what I understand, if it's on the hope side of things, it'll be 3 or 4 weeks, so just about a month. If it's on the bad side of it, this could be closer to 6 to 8. I don't think it's going to be season ending. I don't think it's going to be a 3 or 4 month deal, but 6 to 8 weeks may be a reasonable expectation.
Oh, man.
Yeah, exactly. Not, is that Riz or was that the Grape Lady announcers? It's a little hard to tell. Those poor news people after they saw with the and, not her.
Oh, stop. I can't breathe. Stop.
Oh, no.
I think she's actually hurt.
No, I think she is.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. No. Oh, dear. Oh, that's right off Robbie's finger. Oh, that's bad. Oh, no. So, broken hand. Cano's going to miss a couple weeks or possibly even a couple of months here, Brock. I think you and I see this the same way, which is because it's going to be short term, you don't mess around with D. Gordon. But, God, I Howdy presents some pretty compelling arguments the other direction, annoyingly so. But yeah. Howdy presents a compelling case, and I think about two-thirds of you out there as Mariner fans would agree, well, you got a Gold Glove second baseman in D. Gordon. Slide him over to second base for a little while. Let Heredia play center field, and what's the difference?
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to do that, and I don't think they should, but it's. I'll admit there's a compelling case.
And I guess ultimately, like if you they know all the cards, okay? They know this thing on the inside and outside. And I'm not even taking your personality or the clubhouse aspect of it. You called his moves kind of fantasy paper baseball moves. I just want to maybe cut between those two and say, what gives you the best chance to win today? What gives you the best chance to win this series? What gives you the best chance? I'm not looking at D. Gordon staying at center field as a 2019 and 2020 move. I am not. That's not the lens I'm looking at this through. I'm looking at it as he's done this for the last 6 months. Keep him comfortable. He's having a phenomenal year. He's been arguably your best player. You're one of your most important people getting comfortable playing center field and leading off and doing all of this. So I want to keep him in that lane. Mm. Right? And I hate to make a football comparison, but remember, like, Bobby gets hurt. We slide KJ over, and then we're going to bring Kevin Pierre-Lewis. No. Keep KJ there and bring in a new middle linebacker. Don't make two moves if you only have to make one move in this situation. And Beckham's a 31-year-old pro. He's been there and he has done it. This moment won't be too big for him as he gets the first shot at it. And hopefully he can hit at the bottom of the lineup and just kind of keep things going and be serviceable for 4 to 6 weeks.
Howdy, you were pretty adamant earlier that you make the move and you let Heredia play center field. Would you feel differently if the Mariners had an up-and-coming prospect who was coming up to play second base instead of Gordon Beckham?
And then you could put him in there right now?
Yeah. Yeah, if they had a kid right in Double-A right now. I mean, if this was Dustin Ackley when he was in Double or Triple-A, would you feel better about it?
Yeah, because then you're just starting the clock on a future process that's going to happen anyways. You don't have an option right now that's going to happen when Robinson Cano is gone. If I was to say you had a plan, it would be D. Gordon moves back into second base once Cano's done there. That would be the only plan I can see for the organization. So to me, start that process.
What gives you a better shot to win today?
So hold on a minute. So you're doing this because it's about the future after this year?
I'm saying that that's a benefit of it as well. On top of the fact that it's better for you right now.
Then what are you going to do in a couple of months?
Eventually, this is probably where it's going to go anyways. But D. Gordon's still on your team in 2 years.
What are you going to do in 2 months, though, when you're trying to, when you want your best out there for the stretch run in August and September, and D. Gordon, instead of playing center field and continuing to improve and get better and better there, has gone away from that and is now playing second base every day in the middle of the season, then you're going to expect him to go back at the end of the year
yeah.
and Cano is healthy and just pick it back up and be great in center?
Well, he's not great in center right now. Well, he's fine in center.
But don't you think
that he was fine when the season started. He's maybe a little bit better. So, yeah, by the time he gets
if
back
he
around,
is just
he's still taking
it.
Fly balls during the season. Yeah, he's going to be fine in center fielder, just like he was day one.
Okay, but you two answer me this question.
I don't know that I buy that.
This is like the Shannon Dreher Howdy podcast. I like this, and I get to be right in the middle of it. You two answer this question. What gives you the best chance to win? What would give you the best chance to win today? Today, when the lineup comes out today. Heredia in center field.
To righty or lefty on the hill from Minnesota?
I don't know. And D. Gordon and playing second
base. Jake Odorizzi.
Okay, a righty. So you got a righty on the hill today. And what gives you a better chance today? Heredia in center field? And D. Gordon moving today after 6 months of not doing it, but moving into second base, getting his little glove, not his big outfield glove, his little glove and playing second base today, or I think what we expect to see, and that's Beckham playing
today,
second. Yes.
In a one-game playoff against Jake Odorizzi and the Minnesota Twins, you'd be better off with Heredia in center field.
Okay.
In a real-world scenario where that's not the case and you've got to go through the next couple of months without Cano and then the couple of months after that once he's back, I think you're better off with D. Gordon in center
field. I respect you, but completely disagree. Completely. I mean, at worst, Guillermo already hits with a .222 batting average against the opposite hand. I mean, Gordon Beckham's like lifetime career average against anyone is .237. We're not talking about like a .300 hitter. His splits are even on both sides. So he's barely any worse against just one type of pitcher. So yeah, generally speaking, he's going to be better at the plate no matter what anyways. Yeah. And he's a Gold Glove caliber center fielder because you benched Leonis Martin in center field last year because you thought Heredia was better. So you're sitting on two Gold Glove outfielders at two of your most important defensive positions. Mother, you have to do this.
Look at Mother Hen back there.
I know. Like a wet hen back
there.
I've been waiting
for this.
Excited.
For 2 hours and 37 minutes, I'm going to drop this egg right on your head.
Yep.
Salk.
Now,
like
and fantasy baseball-wise, as always, Howdy, you're right. I don't think that's the way the reality will work in this game, and it's just not.
Why don't they like Heredia more? I think I got to legitimately ask that.
They like him a lot as a fourth outfielder. They love him in that role. They love his at-bats against lefties. They love what he does in the field. They love him as a fourth outfielder. They just see that as his role.
Andrew Romine's going to play every day at second base now, right?
I don't think so. I don't know.
Why in the world? Like,
maybe he does. I don't know. Maybe he does.
Romine or Beckham?
He makes your 25-man roster ahead of Beckham anyway, so why would he be the next guy in line?
Because you have to have a shortstop.
Yes.
So then you switch him over to shortstop if there's an injury.
Yeah.
So why does he just play second base?
That doesn't explain. The reason he makes the team over Beckham, despite not having as good a spring, is because he's more versatile and specifically can play shortstop. You have to have one person on your team other than your shortstop who can play shortstop. And he's that guy. Beckham is not a shortstop. He can play second. He can play third. He can fill in at first base if you need to. Romine also can play the outfield and catch and do all the other things that if you really needed him to do, he could do. But the reason he makes the team specifically over Beckham is because he can play shortstop. You have to have a second shortstop on your team. And you know that. You're a baseball guy. So you're not. I know you're not just like. I know you're not just trying to make a point here, right?
All I'm saying is,
you're not just exaggerating to make a point.
A markedly better hitter,
but you if Roman is a markedly worse hitter, he made the team because he can play shortstop. You know that
yes.
to be true because you're a smart guy and you follow baseball for a long time.
But there are a lot of sticks you can put at second base if that's really what you want. And Gordon Beckham is not that great a hitter. He never has. He's not actually even that great of a second baseman. His fielding percentage is like generally lower than most second basemen anyways.
Is that mostly at second or
is
that overall including what he's done at third?
Oh, because just second base. I looked at his splits by position.
Okay. Wow, this is kind of fun.
Yeah. And he's played 50 games at shortstop in his career, so in a pinch he could play.
And by the way, this is why you're not like 95.
I'm not. No, Howdy makes some really good points.
Sure
he makes them in a really annoying way, but he makes some really good points. He's right about a lot of that
it's
stuff.
It's not 100% either.
And I like Heredia, and I'd like to see him play more, but
I don't think
they're
going to
do that for the longer term.
I guess I wish they liked him more. And maybe he's going to get opportunity. We'll see how all of this is going to shake out. Ultimately, you can help make those decisions for those coaches with how you seize and capitalize on the opportunities, and hopefully he can prove even more.
And hopefully here we're going to talk to Scott Servais on Wednesday about it. We'll go down there, as we tend to do, before each of these Wednesday matinee games. They've got one at home on Wednesday, so hopefully we'll talk to Scott at 9:30. A lot of people wondering why not Taylor Motter. I don't think you want to see him at second base every day, and I don't think they do either.
The Motter pop?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think they would like to do some other things. All right, let's move it along here. Let's answer your questions as we do at the end of every single show. 710-710, powered by Coors Light. You know what it works. You text us, we answer it. You can text in things like this, too. Wow, not a good show today. Good luck tomorrow, guys. You can send texts like that, or you could just ask questions, whatever works for you. It's next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Hey, Brock Hewitt here for Toyota Puyallup. You know, when you're shopping for a new vehicle, you want the best value and to be treated fairly. You want confidence that the dealership will be there long after the sale. Well, Toyota Puyallup is Washington's most awarded Toyota dealer for customer satisfaction, and they've been doing it for almost 50 years. Toyota Puyallup has more than 700 new Toyotas for you to choose from and one of the largest selections of Toyota trucks in the Northwest. Plus, they all come with 2 years of complimentary maintenance. So go see Carrie and her team at Toyota Puyallup, putting you first since 1970.
Hey, this is Bob Stelton from the Bob Gross and Tom Show. I want to thank you for listening to the Brock and Salk Show. And you know what would be fantastic is if you checked out the Bob Gross and Tom Show every day from noon to 3. You can stream us live at 710sports.com or on the 710 Sports app or listen on demand.
This is Brock and Salk's Answer the question, jerk.
Keep asking questions. Come on, I'll answer them. Come on, I'm here. I'm going to answer your questions, dang it.
That's my question! The question, jerk!
Well, don't just stand there. Answer the question, jerk!
All right, time to answer your questions. We do it all the time, 710-710, powered by Coors Light every day at 945. Pretty simple process here. Let's see what the people have come up with today. I didn't see anybody else say that it was not a good show today.
I mean, I felt like it was kind of a little eclectic show.
Yeah, I'm sorry you didn't like it. Thank you for listening.
No, we'll do better.
We'll try to do better tomorrow.
No excuses, no explanations.
That's a good thing. We're going to get 5 opportunities this week.
Yep.
You got to seize the day.
Jerks, I need a non-motorized watercraft. What's the best option for me?
Non-motorized?
So what are your options?
Kayak.
Sailboat?
Yeah.
Stand-up paddleboard?
Yeah, but sailboats also are motorized. You know, you got to always have a little kicker.
So that doesn't count. A rowboat, I guess.
Rowboat, canoe, kayak.
One of the sit-down pedal boats.
It's all going to enjoy.
Rock and I did that on Lake Union.
You know, the air mattress you blow up and you just swim with.
I like the kayaks that have pedals as well, so you can do both. Mm-hmm. Those are my favorite.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you just get a pool noodle? See what happens.
They didn't rule out floats.
Just get a couple of pool noodles and get out there.
Paddleboard.
Make it happen.
Mike Ferrari, paddleboard. Paddleboard extraordinaire, Mike Ferrari.
Yeah?
You ever paddleboard?
No.
Yeah, it's a lot harder than
stand-up paddleboard?
Yeah, like you see people out there.
It's great
there,
for
like,
your core.
Yeah, oh, that's
Wendell went out
not that hard. No, it's pretty hard.
I've done yoga. Stand-up. There's stand-up paddleboard yoga, which is
a
treat. It's hard.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
Did you fall over?
I did not.
You know, we had a friend.
Very impressed.
What do you think of this, by the way? I had a friend that over the weekend was at a bachelorette party, and the start of it was yoga and wine. You ever done a yoga wine party?
Sounds wonderful.
No, I haven't. Clearly, I haven't been living.
Nope. Haven't done
that. You got plans after the show today?
Yoga and wine party. Knock it out.
Next question.
I'd like to see the 5 of us in yoga pants. That'd be entertaining.
No, thanks. Jerks, what is your ideal picnic food lineup? Picnics are tough. Here's what I would probably say. My favorite thing to do for a picnic is to buy really, really good sub sandwiches.
Yep.
Like a really
no question
great, with really good bread, like awesome Italian bread or something, or good baguette. Yep. Either roast beef or an Italian sub or something like that.
Build your own sub bar.
Absolutely.
With all the mixes.
Yes. You stop ahead of time. It's all wrapped up in that paper thing.
Yeah, you do it all. Yes. You don't bring your own
pre-made
materials. Oh, yes.
For that, I would want that made by somebody else, like a real professional. Like the best sub you can get, and I would like to bring that to a picnic.
Yep.
You got to have your drinks, standard drinks, non-alcoholic, because it's a public place. You can't drink in public.
Yeah, you can bring a little Yeti cup.
Chips.
No reason you can't bring a Yeti cup and a couple of Boaties.
Probably a good place for some Lay's barbecue chips.
Definitely some Lay's barbecue, some Cheetos, some Puff Cheetos.
Yep. I good question for you.
Little Debbie snacks.
What do you think of this sandwich, though? If you can have that, but maybe just you slide in a... You've got the only place I would ever think I would ever want a bologna sandwich. An old school white bread, bologna, cheese, mustard. I don't know. There's a little part of that's attractive to
me. Buddy.
Is there good bologna?
Nope.
Is there something called good bologna?
This is kind of the high-end bologna.
Nope.
There's no high-end bologna.
No.
Are you sure?
No. Yeah.
It's made with the better lips.
I'll stick with salami, thanks.
Next question.
I'll stick with salami.
Are you sure there's no good bologna?
Pretty sure.
What about spam?
It may be good. I've never had it.
Okay.
Jerks.
Yeah?
I'm going on a road trip to San Francisco this summer. What is the best road trip you've ever been on? Well, it's the trip we took with the Silver Fox to Spokane.
That was up there.
That was the best one I've been on with you.
That was a good time together. I love road trips.
So do I.
I think they're the best.
My favorite thing.
You know, taking the old Toyota Sienna minivan Carrie hooked me up with last year, the whole family, all the way to spring training and back. I love that.
My two best, I drove from L.A. I've driven across country a few times in college, but I drove with my good buddy from L.A. to Boston. We started, or actually L.A. to D.C. and stopped at a bunch of baseball stadiums along the way. That was
ooh,
right there. And then I rented a van with some friends and drove from Boston to New Orleans and back.
Windowless?
Huh? A windowless van? No, it was like a minivan. We named it Nicole after this girl named Nicole who didn't get to come with us.
Oh.
So since she was mad, we just named the van Nicole after her.
Nice.
And so she was there in spirit. Thankfully, not in person. She's kind of annoying.
I did
but we went all the way to New Orleans, went all through the South. It was awesome.
did run into a little issue yesterday. I always said fancy myself a trucker, but I think I'm going to have a little issue, especially this time of year.
Yeah.
Because the bug splatter. I had to, like, clean my windshield a lot.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing's wrong with it, but if you're a trucker, like, you're taking time, money out of your pocket,
yeah.
Right? If you're constantly having to go wash and scrub your windshield instead of just sucking
you need,
it up.
You need a tear-off one like they have in NASCAR. Just tear off that sheet and go on to the next.
The amount of bugs on my... Oh, man, there are a lot of bugs. That Yakima Canyon. Next.
Jerks, why do the Mariners have a one-gamer against the Twins today? Makeup game.
Yep.
It's an off day in the schedule. Quick makeup game. 4 o'clock start. 3 o'clock pregame show here at 7.
More rain in the forecast.
Oh, is there really?
May end up with a double rain.
Oh,
oh boy.
That'd be great.
70% chance of rain throughout the evening.
Jerks, do you enjoy going to weddings?
Going to one this weekend.
Really?
Yeah. Dory Monson's oldest. His first he's marrying off. Can't wait. It's been too long. I didn't like that stretch where there was wedding after wedding after wedding, like Kyle's been in for the last car wash
long
in 5
stretch.
Years. Yeah. I didn't love that, but now, yeah, been excited.
I love weddings. I think they're awesome. I love them.
Just get out of the house.
Emotional.
I brings you back. It'd be 19 years from Molly and I.
How about getting drunk and dancing?
Every time.
Let's go.
Like
no better place too. To get drunk and dancing at a wedding. Kyle, did you do any dancing at your wedding this weekend?
I did a little bit of dancing. I did more of the getting drunk part of that story.
Hawaii wedding.
Correct. Hawaii wedding.
They have a specialty drink for the wedding? Mai Tais?
Yeah, it was a his and hers. It was a vodka pineapple or a bourbon pineapple.
Oh, wow.
We had like a fire-breathing native dancing folks.
Wow.
Very impressive.
That's pretty cool.
That was great.
How was the bourbon and pineapple?
Oh, it was very good. I put a little cherry in there, actually. Yeah, I wasn't
fruit it up a little bit. Why wouldn't you?
Bourbon.
Do you have any Mai Tais while you were in Hawaii?
No, not one. No, not a big Mai Tai guy.
I'm with you.
I did some pina coladas, though.
Like that.
Did you surf?
I watched some surfing. No, okay. I didn't. I mean,
did you do any surfboard yoga like Lydia did?
We did a full stretching routine one morning, though. Everyone was kind of hurting. I was sore and aching, and we went on the beach and
stretched.
My buddy Dan led us in a 10-minute stretch.
Wow, some aerobics.
Video?
Yeah.
Video of you stretching for 10 minutes?
There might have been some of the neighbors shooting video, yeah.
trying to learn a thing or two.
Oh, man, these guys are limber.
Look at that giant bird out there.
Oh, my gosh.
Honey.
What flexibility?
Are we supposed to have giant birds like that on the beach? Oh, that's a guy.
Native
Sorry,
to Hawaii.
That's Kyle.
I think it's a flamingo.
How was your sex appeal in Hawaii? Good?
Strong, yeah.
Strong to quite strong?
Yeah, I think so. I wore some native beads.
You did?
Yeah, I really set it off.
I don't think it would have.
You'll have to be the judge.
I am.
You haven't seen a picture. You're just being judgmental.
I can imagine, though. It depends how seriously you were wearing them. I think when the problem Caitlin had with your sexiness is that you're not serious enough to be sexy. I don't know whether wearing Hawaiian beads is going to help your cause there.
Contributing factor. That's a complicated formula.
All right, we got to get out of here.
John Morosi at 8. I'm trying to talk to 2 gamblers at 9, too.
We'll see if that works out. Stick around for John Clayton. Coming up next, we'll be with you guys tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. Until then, see you, everybody.
Again, I'd like to say there's a reason for this stuff, Mike, but this one I can't really explain.
This is a chopper!